calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, a lot in the news today. Al Gore steps up to the plate. We're going to be sharing with you bits and pieces of his speech yesterday, in which, before the Daughters of the American Revolution, in which he specifically and explicitly defined George W. Bush as a lawbreaker and called for Congress, the United States Senate, the House of Representatives, independent of each other, and a special prosecutor of sorts or a special investigator to be looking into what's going on with the violations of law in the United States by George W. Bush. We will get to that in the program today. Among other things, it's going to be a fascinating day. A new Zogby poll just released shows that by 52-43% margin, Americans believe that Congress should consider impeaching George W. Bush if he wiretapped the people of this country without court approval. Oh, my. Tom Hayden's going to be with us in the second hour of our program. Alec DeBrow with the media coordinator with the International Labor Communications Association in a third hour. But right now we have with us Mark Morano. Mark is a senior staff writer with CNS News, consortiumnewsservice.com, originally named Conservative News Service, wasn't it, Mark?
Excuse me. Yes, it was.
And you have come out and... let me let you say it. You've raised some questions about Jack Murtha.
Absolutely. In the great tradition of journalism, we have looked at a politician's resume and biography, and we're questioning aspects of it that they themselves have claimed. Bob Dole's record was questioned by The Nation magazine, David Corn, in 1996. He was accused of inflating his war heroics. First George Bush's father, was criticized, I believe, in the 1988 campaign for attacking a unarmed fishing boat in World War II. And, of course, Ronald Reagan was attacked for serving in Hollywood. So in that tradition, in the same way that George Bush's National Guard documents were looked at, in the same way that Dan Quayle's lack of a military service was looked at, in the same way John Kerry was looked at, we looked at John Murtha's record. And what we found was that there's a controversy going back to 1968 about the circumstances and the evidence by which John Murtha has received his two Purple Hearts. And as you can imagine, writing a story like that, all hell is broken loose in terms of in certain sectors. My article has now been published on websites like BuzzFlash and Huffington Post and other sites like that, and my hate mail is running 99% to 1% against it, people wishing I die and have a slow, painful death and go to hell and all the other kinds of phrases, the veiled threats. But essentially, we examined Murtha's claims. We got two veterans, a World War II veteran, and a decorated Vietnam veteran who made these allegations years and in some cases decades ago. Neither man spoke up after Murtha became an anti-war hero. That's a very important point. These are not someone coming forward now that he's an anti-war hero and making an issue out of it. This was looking at the historical record, old microfiche files, old newspapers going back to 1967, and analyzing this, and essentially they're saying that Jack Murtha exaggerated his military bio and was not originally, one man, Harry Fox, who was a congressional aide to a Congressman John Saylor, said that he was initially turned down for the Purple Hearts. And Murtha says he never asked for the Purple Hearts. However, the documentation Murtha's office sent us says that per your request, it's for the Marine Corps. So Murtha is at odds with his own documents he sent us. He also has differing dates on his website than the documents he sent us. He's also given three different accounts of how he received his Purple Hearts. Over the years, his ankle, knee, and arm, but the official documents show was his face and forehead. So there's a series of incidents, and we document all this in our 2,000-word essay, and I'd be happy to take any questions, but thank you for giving me the chance to have an opening statement here, just because this has been such a, as you can imagine, and as your listeners can imagine, that's such a volatile topic.
We're talking with Mark Morano, senior staff writer with Cybercast News Service, cnsnews.com. Mark, you listed a whole bunch of folks, Bob Dole, Ronald Reagan, and whatnot, whose qualifications have been questioned. They were all running for president.
Sure.
Last time I looked, Jack Murtha wasn't running for president. CNSNews.com was also the first to, if my sources are correct, over at the Daily Kos.
Yeah, I saw that article.
In-depth
analysis of my career.
Right, there you go. That you guys were the first to lay out the Swift Boat allegations against John Kerry.
We were.
Why the politics of personal destruction? Why is this something that you're pursuing?
The politics of personal destruction. I mean, this is journalism 101 in the sense that you have a story. you go up and you look up, you know, here's a guy who's literally the sole reason John Murth is on TV, and I don't know if you saw 60 Minutes Sunday night, but the sole reason he has been taken as the number one credible on the war in Iraq is the fact that he has two Purple Hearts.
That's not the sole reason. The main reason is that he's been on the House Armed Services Committee forever. He's been the leading spokesman for the Defense Department for the better part of 20 years. Completely set aside his record in Vietnam. He's the insider's insider when it comes to defense on behalf of defense.
Right.
You know, a lot of liberals think this guy is a conservative.
I said was accurate. He's on 60 Minutes. He said that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld did not know combat. He knows combat. He has two Purple Hearts. He shed blood for this country. This was all on the show, and the idea is he, therefore, has a greater understanding than them and knows more than them.
But he does know combat. I mean, whether, you know,
that's fine, but I'm saying that's what we're examining. He's made that the issue.
Are you suggesting that Jack Murtha was not in Vietnam?
Not at all. He volunteered. Jack Murtha was running a car wash operation, 1966 in the Marine Reserve. He volunteered to go. Jack Murtha also volunteered to go to the Korean War, though he did not serve in Korea. The war ended before he had a chance.
Then why would you attack and impugn the reputation of this man who's a great American patriot? It's really just because he's come out against the war, is it not?
Not at all. I was doing a story. Jack Murtha has been he's essentially been considered untouchable by the media. So I honestly, this was not a document dump. This was not Karl Rove calling up Mark Morano or Cybercast News Service and saying, hey, here we got something. We've been shoveling this around. No one else wants it. Do you want it? This was me looking up at the historical record, finding a former Democratic decorated Vietnam veteran, accusing Murtha of having what he says are invalid medals. It has a former congressional aide who says that he had insufficient evidence.
But what does that have to do? You know, we've already heard
okay,
the charges,
fine,
Mark.
Fine.
But
well,
what does that have to do with the fact that all these guys, all these chicken hawks in the White House and in this administration who are sending our young men and women off to fight and die really didn't serve at all? I mean, you know, you got George W. Bush, who
absolutely
was drunk and AWOL.
Sure.
And you're going after Murtha?
Don't forget Dick Cheney. He had five deferments. No, this is a question of a man who put himself, he's putting himself up as a war hero. Just recently in the news, he was
he's putting himself up as a guy who understands what it's like to combat.
Right. And the issue is he's putting himself up as a war hero, though. He was up with a recent injured soldier saying, oh, he'd give him one of his Purple Hearts. He is mentioning this constantly. So all we're doing is there is credible evidence going back to 1968 that these may have been inflated and or questionable circumstances surrounding the medals by very valid people, and Murtha himself gave different accounts. Now, you're telling me, if you're my news editor, say you, Tom Hartman, or my news editor at Cybercast, I come to you and I say, look at what we have here, and look at the tradition of looking at politicians and their backgrounds. You're going to tell me this is not a story, get out of my office, get out of here, we're not going to touch this. Did you condemn David Corn of The Nation in 1996 when he went after him, or your only criteria is if someone's running for president? Jack Murtha is a national figure now. He's now subject to scrutiny. The reason this was never done before is I'll be 100% honest with you. My mom's from Uniontown, Pennsylvania, with Jack Murtha's district. He's from Johnstown nearby. I'd never heard of Jack Murtha. I just never heard of him until he became famous in November 2005. This is the reason he's now under scrutiny. And this is not to say that he didn't deserve his medals.
Mark Morano, isn't this really, with Cybercast News, or CNSnews.com, I mean, you guys were the first to come out with the John Kerry Swift boat allegations. You're now, you know, coming out with this, John Murtha really doesn't deserve his Purple Hearts, just like you said John Kerry didn't deserve his Purple Hearts. Those claims against John Kerry were later discredited after a lot of damage was done to his reputation. Isn't this attempt to slap down Jack Murtha's reputation part of an attempt to change the conversation away from should we be withdrawing from Iraq
now? You know, that's a political question. I'm a journalist. This was a story no one touched. This was an exclusive scoop. And first of all, I'm not the first reporter to report on this. The Uniontown Herald Standard did extensive reporting, and we quote that in our article, from 1994 and 1996, including the differing accounts.
So I'm assuming, Mark Morano, that this story that you're promoting here through Cybercast News Service is going to be making it all across the conservative blogosphere,
okay,
and you'll be showing up on Fox News and everything
else.
Thank
you very much for that question. And I want to say, when was the last time you had me on your show? If you recall, I was on for doing a story against Fox News and against Roger Ailes, essentially saying some climate scientists and other groups were slamming Fox News for doing a pro-global warming, human-caused, catastrophic global warming article.
Right, and you were arguing the Exxon point of view of there ain't no such thing.
That's your characterization. Either way, that's irrelevant. My point being is that you had me on to talk about how none of the conservatives would talk about it. The so-called echo chamber that you guys on the left like to talk about was silent. And guess what? Guess what? Do a LexisNexis search, do a Google search. The echo chamber is silent, Sean.
So are you saying that nobody's going to pick up your Jack Murtha story?
Fox News hasn't touched the story with a 20-foot pole. Bush administration hasn't mentioned it. The only people going nuts on it at the moment are the left-wing blogs, left-wing sites. The Washington Post has done it, Howard Kurtz. So if you think this is, I'm in my mail, as I've told you, 99% negative.
Yeah.
This is a story that I, as a journalist,
it'll be interesting to see how it shakes
no
out. It's going to be really interesting to watch this. Mark Morano, Mark, I'm sorry, we're out of time here. Mark Morano, senior staff writer at Cybercast News Service, CNSNews.com. It's 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
All right, Republicans, line up for duty. Where are you going? Hey!
Chicken hawks. Chicken hawks. Chicken hawks. Chicken hawks.
Karl Rove.
He didn't serve.
Dick Cheney.
He didn't serve.
Tom DeLay.
He didn't serve.
And George Bush was A-W-O-L.
Chicken hawks.
Yes, welcome
chicken
back to France. Tom Hartman radio program, Viagra for your brain, our theme for today. We're about the Constitution, not about kings. When this country was founded, they weren't just fighting terrorists. They were fighting the whole British army. And they still upheld the Fourth Amendment. As Al Gore so passionately and eloquently pointed out yesterday, we're going to share that with you in just a minute, our quote for the day from Benjamin Franklin. Today is his 300th birthday. Educate your children to self-control, to the habit of holding passion and prejudice and evil tendencies subject to an upright and reasoning will, and you will have done much to abolish misery from their future and crimes from society. Ben Franklin, also, if you want a good laugh, just Google Ben Franklin, advice to a younger man. And I'll just leave it at that. I'm not going to go any farther with that one. Al Gore yesterday, speaking truth to power. This is absolutely amazing. Al Gore, originally Bob Barr was going to introduce him because of a technical glitch. He wasn't able to, but Al refers to Bob. Bob Barr, keep in mind, was the Republican congressman in the House of Representatives from Georgia. I sort of know Bob Barr. He and I had a few, we've drank beer together in Manny Malouf's tavern in Atlanta. He was the guy who led the impeachment effort against Bill Clinton in the House of Representatives. Bob Barr and I have debated on National Public Radio before, and he was going to, and he is essentially saying the same thing that Al Gore is. He was going to introduce Al Gore, and later on Larry King Live, later yesterday afternoon, he came out and supported Al Gore's statement. Here's Al Gore yesterday. Some powerful things. Powerful, powerful things.
One of the other ways the administration has tried to control the flow of information has been by consistently resorting to the language and politics of fear in order to short-circuit the debate and drive its agenda forward without regard to the evidence.
This is really important, this whole politics of fear thing and the consequences of it. And Gore speaks this so brilliantly. By the way, thanks a lot to the folks over at crooksandliars.com for slicing and dicing this audio.
Fear drives out reason. Fear suppresses the politics of discourse and opens the door to the politics of destruction. The founders of our country faced dire threats. If they failed in their endeavors, they would have been hung.
You get that? I mean, this is absolutely true. Remember Ben Franklin's famous speech? Here it is, his 300th birthday. If we don't hang together, we shall certainly hang separately. These guys weren't just facing a few terrorists coming over here from Saudi Arabia. These guys were facing the entire British Army living in their backyard and quartering their soldiers in their bedrooms.
As traitors, the very existence of our country was at risk. Yet in the teeth of those dangers, they insisted on establishing the full Bill of Rights. Is our Congress today in more danger than were their predecessors when the British Army was marching on the Capitol? Is the world more dangerous than when we faced an ideological enemy with tens of thousands of nuclear missiles ready to be launched on a moment's notice to completely annihilate the country.
I mean, this is such an important point that Al Gore makes. We faced the Soviet Union, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis. All we faced the Brit. Did we throw away the Fourth Amendment? Did we tear up the Bill of Rights? No. In fact, our founders, with the British amongst us, with loyalists, one third of America, at least during the Revolutionary War, was on the side of the British. Amongst us. I mean, people within their own families, even. And we insisted. We insisted on the right to privacy.
It is simply an insult to those who came before us and sacrificed so much on our behalf to imply that we have more to be fearful of than they did. And yet they faithfully protected our freedoms, and now it's up to us to do the very same thing.
And it is so up to us now. And I'm telling you, and this new Zogby poll, this is not some internet poll. This is not this is not something that MoveOn.org did last week with the five phone calls. This is a Zogby poll. It's going to be released today, showing that by a 52-43% margin, Americans believe that Congress should consider impeaching George W. Bush if he wiretapped the people of this country without court approval. And, by the way, he has admitted to that very thing. And first of all, a year ago he lied about it. You will get to hear his lies in a few minutes. And then later he confessed to it. And should he be held accountable? I believe so. Al Gore continues with his speech. I want to play a little more of it here for you after we come back from the break at the bottom of the hour. But Al Gore coming right out and saying George W. Bush has committed crimes. Not saying he might have. Not saying, gee, we should look into this. Not saying, well, let's investigate a land deal that was 30 years old like Whitewater was. Not even saying, hey, let's investigate his sale of stock in his company to Salman bin Laden back 20 years ago where he, you know, made a $600,000 profit and the SEC never cleared his name. I mean, you want to go back and spend $40 million investigating the president like the Republicans did with Bill Clinton. You could find a lot of dirt on George W. Bush, but he's not even talking about any of that stuff. He's saying, right now, this guy is breaking the law. 27 minutes past the hour, I'm Tom Hartman.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And I won't back down. Well, I know what's right. I got just one life. In a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 34 minutes past the hour. Just to show you what's at stake, we're going to come back to Al Gore's speech in just a second here. Oh, and by the way, our soundbite for the day, George Clooney, last night at the Golden Globe Awards, just for a smile here. We all need one, right?
I want to thank Jack Abramoff. Who would name their kid Jack with the last words off at the end of your last name? No wonder that guy's screwed up.
No wonder that guy's screwed up. So, anyhow, that's our smile for the day. Our horror for the day. Horror, whatever. John Roberts, when he was being questioned in the preliminary questions, they call it now the Ginsburg option, although Ginsburg actually was very candid in her answers to questions. There were a couple of times when she was asked questions about specific things that specifically were going to come before the court, and she said it wouldn't be appropriate to talk about that. But Roberts and Alito have turned this into an art form. I mean, they have elevated this to the point where they're just refusing to answer any question about anything. And I remember interviewing Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, who said that he had spoken with Roberts, and my recollection
of my conversation with Senator Wyden, and I may be wrong, and if I am, I apologize to Senator Wyden in advance, but my recollection of my conversation with him was that he felt that John Roberts, in all probability, would vote to uphold the Oregon Death with Dignity law, the assisted suicide law that was going before the Supreme Court. Of course, he couldn't get a specific assurance because it was something going before the Supreme Court, so he was having to go on his sense of it. But here's a good Democrat, a good senator from a blue state, who, in my opinion, was taken in by John Roberts. And today, the Death with Dignity case was released, a Supreme Court ruling, and in a 6-3 vote, the 1997 Oregon law was upheld. Now, Oregon voters voted for this first in 1994. Then a bunch of local right-wingers got a ballot initiative drive going. Here in Oregon, we've got a ballot initiatives not unlike California, where, you know, they go back to about the same period in time, around the turn of the 19th to the 20th centuries, with the progressive movement in the United States, where the people can write laws. And they, in 97, the cons got on the ballot a ballot measure that would have done away with the 1994 Death with Dignity law, and that failed. People voted very, very strongly in favor of the ability of people, very, very ill people, critically ill people, with the consent of two physicians to commit suicide legally and painlessly and with the help of their physician. Okay, so this law went before, and it went all the way up to the Ninth Circuit, U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which said that John Ashcroft said, no, sorry, Oregon, you can't do that. People in Oregon, they can't do that. They said, or Ashcroft's unilateral attempt to regulate general medical practices historically entrusted to state lawmakers interferes with the democratic debate about physician-assisted suicide. Nonetheless, the Bush administration appealed this to the Supreme Court, and the only three justices who voted against the people of Oregon, the will of the people of the state of Oregon, the only three justices were Scalia, Thomas, and Roberts. Three of the four Catholics on the bench also, and I don't mean that as like Catholic bashing, but that is a church that has inserted itself into this issue, has come out strongly against a physician-assisted suicide, just as it has come out strongly against abortion. And if you don't think that the Supreme Court matters, or if you think that when these guys put the nice face on when they go before Congress, that they're going to continue to be nice when they get on the Supreme Court, think again. And consider calling your senator right now, toll-free, 888-355-3588. That'll get you to Capitol Hill, 888-355-3588. Each one of us has two senators. And particularly if you have a Republican, well, particularly actually if you have a Democratic senator, it looks like the Democratic senators in all probability are going to stand together against Alito, but whether or not they'll filibuster is an open question. And in my opinion, they should. And I strongly recommend that you contact your senator and say, you know, if you are a Democratic senator, please filibuster this guy. And if you have a Republican senator or only Republican senators, contact them and say, please do not vote for the confirmation of this man. We do not need Sam Alito. We do not need more right-wing cranks on the Supreme Court. We have three already. That's enough. Thank you very much. Back to Al Gore. Al Gore is giving his speech, and he's talking about how the Bush administration claims that we live in a more terrifying time now than ever before. They're using terror to motivate the American people, and that's a slap in the face, spitting in the face of the founders of this country who faced a terror that George W. Bush can never even imagine, the actual occupation of the country by the British against whom they were fighting. Not to mention World War I, World War II, and other historic wars. So here, Al Gore continues.
We have a duty as Americans to defend our citizens' right, not only to life, but also to liberty and the pursuit of happiness. It is therefore vital in our current circumstances that immediate steps be taken to safeguard our Constitution against the present danger posed by the intrusive overreaching on the part of the executive branch and the president's apparent belief that he need not live under the rule of law. I endorse the words of Bob Barr.
And here, again, keep in mind, Bob Barr, the conservative Republican who led the impeachment of the House of Representatives, he's on the committee that supervised the impeachment of Bill Clinton.
When he said, and I quote, "The president has dared the American people to do something about it for the sake of the Constitution," I hope they will. A special counsel should be immediately appointed by the Attorney General to remedy the obvious conflict of interest that prevents him from investigating what many believe are serious violations of law by the president.
Now, last night we had we were treated to the spectacle of Gonzalez, the Attorney General, the guy, the architect, as some would say, of this policy. Saying, well, you know, under Clinton in the Aldridge Ames case, Janet Reno did a warrantless search of Aldridge Ames. Aldridge Ames worked for the CIA. When you go to work for the CIA, you essentially sign away your right to privacy as part of your employment contract. It's like going to work for the military. You join the military, you agree to live under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and you actually lose some constitutional rights. It's the nature of the job. It's the nature of the game. Bill Clinton did not violate the law. And Janet Reno did not violate the law when they did a warrantless search of Aldridge Ames. He was a CIA officer who was also a spy. It's a completely different thing. And yet that was the only thing that Gonzalez had to pull out of the hat, and it was a phony argument to begin with. Anyhow, Al Gore continues.
Republican as well as Democratic members of Congress should support the bipartisan call of the Liberty Coalition for the appointment of this special counsel to pursue the criminal issues raised by the warrantless wiretapping of Americans by the president, and it should be a political issue in any race, regardless of party, section of the country, House of Congress, or anyone who opposes the appointment of a special counsel under these dangerous circumstances when our Constitution is at risk.
There you go. Absolutely. In other words, this morning, for example, I had Congressman Brian Baird on from Washington State on my local program on the M620 KPOJ. And I asked him, I said, Congressman Baird, do you support the appointment of an independent counsel or an investigation by the House or Senate, and you're in the House, of the possibility that George W. Bush committed crimes? This is the question we need to be asking every single elected member, and if they say no, hold them accountable for it. Brian Baird said yes. He supports it, by the way, and good on you, Brian Baird, for that. He's a Democrat. I suspect most Democrats would support it, but there may be some who don't. You know, and those, you know, I don't know where Joe Lieberman stands on this, for example. Those who don't, we should throw their butts out of Congress.
Is at risk. Secondly. New whistleblower protection should immediately be established for members of the executive branch who report evidence of wrongdoing, especially where it involves abuse of authority in the sensitive areas of national security. Third, both houses.
Let me just say that's absolutely critically important. Now you have the Bush administration, which didn't want to investigate whether or not, in outing Joe Wilson, crimes were committed in the White House. They now want to investigate, you know, who leaked this information.
Security. Third, both houses of Congress should, of course, hold comprehensive and not just superficial hearings into these serious allegations of criminal behavior on the part of the president, and they should follow the evidence wherever it leads.
Wherever it leads. And this is so important. And you can call your member of Congress now, 888, it's toll-free all across the United States, 888-355-3588, 888-355-3588. If you want to call the payphone number, 202-225-3121. And if you're not sure who your congressman or congresswoman is, if you're not sure who represents you, we each have one member of Congress, a House of Representatives, and two senators. If you're not sure who those people are, simply give them your zip code. Give them your state, and they'll tell you who your senators are. Give them your zip code. When they answer the phone, they will tell you who your member of Congress is, of the House of Representatives, and they will then connect you with that office. So you can call 1-888-355-3588. Today's a great day for activism, to call your senators and say, if they're Democrats, filibuster Alito. If they're Republicans, say, hey, break ranks. Vote against this guy. Enough right-wing cranks. and to contact both your member of the House and your member of the Senate and say, it's time to investigate George W. Bush. 52% of Americans. Impeach him. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends, to the radio support group up by it for We the People of the United States of America, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. At the scene of a traffic accident near Anaheim, California, paramedics rescuing a woman from an overturned car. We're trying to make sure she was okay by asking her questions, and concluded that she was okay when they asked her if she knew who the U.S. president was, and she responded, yes, unfortunately. We're listening to Al Gore.
Fourth, the extensive new powers requested by the executive branch in its proposal to extend and enlarge the Patriot Act should under no circumstances be granted unless and until there are adequate and enforceable safeguards to protect the Constitution and the rights of the American people against the kinds of abuses that have so recently been revealed. Fifth, any telecommunications company that has provided the government with access to private information concerning the communications of Americans without a proper warrant should immediately cease and desist their complicity in this apparently illegal invasion of the privacy of American citizens. Freedom of communication is an essential prerequisite for the restoration of the health of our democracy. It is particularly important that the freedom of the Internet be protected against either the encroachment of government or efforts at control by large media conglomerates. The future of our democracy depends on it.
There you go.
I mentioned
Al Gore, and thanks again to the folks over at crooksandliars.com for slicing and dicing that so well. Here's George W. Bush a year ago when he was already wiretapping our phones, perhaps even his political opposition. Maybe even John Kerry. We don't know. Without a warrant.
Now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so.
Lying through his teeth.
It's important for our fellow citizens to understand, when you think Patriot Act, constitutional guarantees are in place when it comes to doing what is necessary to protect our homeland, because we value the Constitution.
Yeah. And then when he gets caught in the act, Bush comes out and
having suggested this idea, I then obviously went to the question, is it legal to do so? I swore to uphold the laws. Do I have the legal authority to do this? And the answer is absolutely. As I mentioned in my remarks, the legal authority is derived from the Constitution, as well as the authorization of force by the United States Congress.
And let's see, the authorization of force against Iraq by the United States Congress makes no mention of wiretaps, and the Constitution says, quite specifically in the Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. And there's no warrant that has been issued by this guy. None. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Alan in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, thanks a lot for taking my call. First of all, thanks for the show. It's a great show. And
Second of all,
you're welcome. Thanks for keeping Al Gore in the forefront, man. We finally have somebody who's got some fire in his belly to speak of the truth.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, if Al Gore was running for president tomorrow, it would make me so happy. I mean, this guy not only did win the presidency, but we wouldn't be in this mess if Al Gore was president right now.
Well, you're 100% right. The presidency was stolen both times. And, you know, you could talk about any number of issues, but the first issue on my mind right now is Alito.
Yeah.
And you know what? If these guys do not filibuster Alito, then the fate of the country, man, is on their heads.
I agree.
You know, we elect these guys. We pay their salaries. And we hire them not only to collect the perks, but to do the damn dirty work.
I agree.
And these guys, they have got to stand up and take on the fight.
There you go. And if you have a Democratic senator, and I know there in Washington you have both Murray and Cantwell, the toll-free number for Congress, 888-355-3588, and give them a call and say, listen, you know, we just saw how John Roberts voted with Scalia and Thomas in the Oregon Death with Dignity case. We know what these guys are all about. We know what Alito's going to do. We know what's going to happen to a woman's rights to choose. We know, among 100 other things, we know what's going to happen to privacy rights. We know what's going to happen to presidential power. We can't allow the United States to turn into this kind of right-wing autocracy. You know, we threw the kings out back in 1776. Thank you very much. We don't need them anymore. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate that. Bruce in Santa Paula, California. Hey, Bruce, we got about a minute. What's up?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I'm a little PO'd at Al Gore. I just think that the man has come in with his wonderful speech too late. You know, where the hell was he when we really needed him to stand up, and he didn't do it?
Well, a year, first of all, you're talking about the election?
Yeah, I am.
5 years ago? He fought that all the way to the Supreme Court.
Okay, but he.
I mean, I'll go along with you if you say John Kerry wimped out.
Right.
But I'm sorry, Al Gore fought that all the way to the Supreme Court.
Okay, another. I really called to make a point that I hope your readers or I mean your listeners, somebody in Washington D.C. might be able to take and run with it, and that is that lobbying we know is a legal activity,
right.
And this Abramoff thing is all well and good. Well. I came up with an idea that might stop or at least severely curtail lobbyists, and that would be to use the initiative process within the city of Washington, D.C. to make the activities illegal in Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm not sure if Washington, D.C. is... In fact, I'm quite sure that Washington, D.C., you can't do an initiative process inside Washington, D.C. because it's controlled by Congress.
I checked on it. They can do it.
Oh, they can. Oh, interesting. Well, yeah, make lobbying illegal. Wouldn't that be amazing? Washington, D.C. finally setting the moral tone for the rest of the United States. Thanks a lot for the call. I think, frankly, that what we need to do is at a national level all across the United States, not have the tail wag the dog, but we all need to say, sorry, lobbying is bribery. End of discussion. It's 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
We are people of this generation, bred in at least modest comfort, housed now in universities, looking uncomfortably to the world we inherit. When we were kids, the United States was the wealthiest and strongest country in the world, the only one with the atom bomb, the least scarred by modern war, an initiator of the United Nations that we thought would distribute Western influence throughout the world. Freedom and equality for each individual, government of, by, and for the people. These American values we found good principles by which we could live as men. Many of us began maturing in complacency. I'll tell you, one who didn't mature in complacency is Tom Hayden. TomHayden.com is website. This is our Bioneers guest for the day. Bioneers is a nonprofit organization that promotes practical environmental solutions and innovative social strategies for restoring the earth and communities. Bioneers.org. Tom Hayden, one of the most important political leaders to emerge from the new left in the 60s. Tom, you were the author of that opening statement of the Port Huron Statement, weren't you?
Good morning. Yes, I was. I drafted it, and then my friend said we had to make it more dramatic. So those sentences were apparently... more dramatic by the standards of the time. There's a new edition of it out for which I've tried to write a lengthy introduction as to what's the meaning of participatory democracy today. I appreciate your reference to the document.
I want...
One of those might have been, you know.
Yeah.
If it had been a revolution, this would have been the manifesto, but that's not what happened.
Well, for those of us who were active with Students for Democratic Society back in the late 60s and early 70s and who held a view of America reaching toward the vision that was laid out by the founders, however imperfectly executed at the time, I think this was an important document.
Well,
what do you,
you
think? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, so do I. We'll see whether any future generations care about it, but it does seem to be referenced continually in. If you Google, you'll find history textbooks always quote several paragraphs.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the right wing conservatives like Robert Bork, they always say it was a document of sinister implication. If you look interestingly at Argentina and Brazil today, the activists at the grassroots level call their movement participatory democracy. If you look at the reforms in the church, the Catholic Church, the base communities, the liberation theology movement of the 60s and 70s, that was certainly a dimension of participatory democracy. So the idea is still alive, very much so.
We're speaking with Tom Hayden, tomhayden.com, his website. And, Tom, I'm wondering what you think the state of American democracy is right now.
It's schizophrenic, isn't it, Tom? I mean, there's we do seem to have the capacity to... achieve reforms that disclose shocking amounts of information, but the information is usually about how people are keeping secrets from us.
Yeah.
So even with these secret courts, the Bush administration is trying to go around the secret courts to become even more secret in the executive chambers. But I think... over time, and it takes much longer than I would have imagined as a young man, over time, democratic principles do prevail, not in a sequential way, not always, but take the elections in Chile today. It's remarkable that a movement that had support and assistance from the United States, from activists here, could overcome a dictatorship and could install a center-left government and install President Bachelet.
Mm-hmm.
So she was raised on the visions and music and politics of the 60s by her own account.
And in fact, she's a single mother with children by two different men and never married to either one of them. Running against a billionaire guy who was putting himself out as Mr. Family Values, Mr. Religion, dragging his wife and kids around everywhere he went and talking about how she was, some kind of godless, communist or something. And, of course, she was not a communist, but,
might have been godless.
Yeah, well, she proclaims that she's an atheist, actually. Or agnostic, excuse me. But
she's a questioner. I think she's an agnostic. But
yes,
anyway,
they
called her everything but welfare queen.
Yeah,
and she won. So, and I think if you look at the revolutions in the Eastern Bloc over the past 20 years, including the Soviet Union, participatory democracy and nonviolence and mass movements were very much at work. And you start to wonder about the whole conservative idea of totalitarianism. If there was a regime that was actually totally totalitarian, could not be moved from within, then how do we explain what's happened in the dictatorship in Chile or the dictatorship in the Soviet Union and events to come in China? I think totalitarianism is stretching the point. Democracy can confront and dissolve so-called totalitarianism.
Yeah, I believe democracy is in our genes, that we're wired for it, that we're
it's
simply
a need.
For
it. I think it's a need. Yeah, absolutely.
So here in the United States, I'm of the opinion, frankly, that, the New York Times and the Washington Post actually reported it a year after the fact that Al Gore won Florida, that Al Gore won that first election. And frankly, I'm of the opinion that the election, the exit polls were right and the voting machines were wrong, and that John Kerry won the 2004. I know that puts me at odds with a lot of my colleagues, but nonetheless.
Oh, I think that's probably true.
Yeah, so what do we do?
In my generation, we lost national leaders through assassination, the two Kennedys and King and Malcolm X. And therefore, as I think some have said, the Port Huron vision never had a chance to naturally reach its potential. In this generation, you've had the specter of stolen elections. Otherwise, the environmental movement, for example, might have had the opportunity to test the limits of an environmental presidency if Al Gore had been elected. So we are very haunted by near misses, I think, over the past 40 years. And I don't mean to say presidential politics are the be-all and end-all. Life goes on, movements go on, change goes on. But it's been a sorry experience, I think, for a lot of us.
Well, hopefully one that we'll all learn from.
What do you learn, but we're coming around again. You've got a president who's deeply unpopular, and the opportunity to create a progressive government in 2008 is there. But will the Democratic Party be sort of a center conservative party? And if so, what will happen to labor, to students, to environmentalists, to women? Will the left wing of the Democratic Party be left out?
Yeah, this is one of my greatest concerns. We have about 2 minutes left. We're talking with Tom Hayden. TomHayden.com is website, our Bioneers guest for the day from Bioneers.org. And, Tom, it seems to me that there's this battle going, well, it seems to me, it's, it, I think it's pretty obvious, a battle going on inside the Democratic Party for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party between the progressives and the DLC bunch. What can we do to help the progressives win?
I think that the progressives have to define progressive more clearly, but they also have to run candidates in primaries against conservative Democrats. And do so respectfully on the issues, and field a presidential candidate come what may in 2008. Because even if these are losses, some of them, the building of a movement and the machinery of a movement and the message of a movement is what is absolutely critical inside and outside the Democratic Party. I mean, the anti-war movement cannot wait for the Democratic Party to catch up. But it'll be necessary for the anti-war movement to support those candidates who are progressive.
And those voices are starting to emerge. And we're seeing things like Brian Schweitzer in Montana. We're seeing some victories, you know, and Bernie Sanders and other progressives out there. Peter DeFazio. It's a good start. Tom Hayden, TomHayden.com is website for more information. Great talking with you, Tom, and thanks for the many years of service and patriotism that you've evidenced for your nation here, the labor in the vineyard. Good speaking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC or even the DLC. Greg Gorman is with us with Talk Radio News, deep in the belly of the beast in Washington, D.C. Hey, Greg.
Hello, Tom.
So what's happening in Washington today? I'm guessing that there's some fallout from Al Gore's call yesterday for the prosecution of the President of the United States.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that. But first, I wanted to actually just bring up something I did this morning. I spent the morning at the Supreme Court, and as I'm sure you have heard, now living in Oregon as you do, that the Supreme Court upheld Oregon's right to die law 6-3.
And one of the three.
In Oregon, you are allowed, if you are a physician, you are allowed to prescribe drugs. If someone is extremely sick, has an incurable disease, two doctors have agreed that the person has 6 months or less to live, a doctor can prescribe medicine that will kill that person. It was 6-3, and the three dissenters, as you can imagine, were Scalia, Roberts, and Thomas.
Yeah, Roberts, who said he was, who portrayed himself as such a moderate.
Well,
and,
exactly. And, yeah. You know, Tom, it's funny. I was just talking to Ellen Ratner, our bureau chief, and I said, you personally, I was a little disappointed in the Chief Justice in that, you know, this was a state's rights case. And he has now come down on the side of the federal government having more power than the state.
Or he's come down on the side of the Catholic Church.
Well, right. And as we were leaving this morning, you know, the court, you know, all of us reporters were actually talking, is this a moral case about the right to die, or is this laying the groundwork for some kind of state's rights, which if you overturn Roe v. Wade in the future and you've given state's rights back their power, you then say, look, if we overturn Roe v. Wade, it should go back to the states, you know, where it always belongs anyway, according to them. And now they bolstered states' rights power, saying, you know, let states decide. And that's
That Scalia,
you know,
Thomas, and Roberts all voted against states' rights in this case.
Right, that's exactly what they did. All three of them voted against states' rights.
This absolutely exposes
the federal government has the right to make a law to overturn what a state has already passed. And the people of Oregon passed this law twice, saying it's okay if a doctor wants to prescribe medicine that will kill someone if the person has, you know, less than 6 months to live and has an incurable disease.
Yeah, and what this does is it exposes the hypocrisy of those cons who say, oh, we're just strict constructionists. We simply want to interpret the Constitution. No, I'm sorry. They have an agenda. They have a very specific agenda. They believe that morality has nothing to do with the classic questions of morality. Are there hungry among us? Are there poor among us? Are there unsheltered among, you know, homeless among us? Are there those in prison who are there inappropriately? Are there sick among us? They discard that notion of morality, and they think that morality has to do with abortion, with gays, and with whether or not God is being appropriate, their particular version of God is being appropriately worshipped in their particular way with taxpayer money.
Right. God, all over again. It's the same moral issues. And that's really what we were talking about this morning as we were leaving the court. Is this a moral issue for the Chief Justice, or is he trying to lay the groundwork for saying states' rights, except that he came down on the wrong side of states' rights, so that if the debate turns towards, you know, Roe v. Wade should go back to the states, well, here's the Chief Justice saying the states don't have the power to, you know, do what they want, that the federal government has the right to sue something. Well, as we all know, Roe v. Wade is a federal law, and it has not gone to the states. So
well, if you think that actually Roe v. Wade is not... Actually, Roe v. Wade is not a federal law. It's a Supreme Court decision.
Well, that's
it's struck down state laws is what it did.
Well,
but here's the
law for the entire country passed by the Supreme Court.
Right. Here's your potential argument, Greg. You've got John Roberts along with Scalia and Thomas saying no, states' rights don't are not strong enough to support physician-assisted suicide in this particular case. If they're going to be consistent with regard to Roe v. Wade, what they would have to do is they would have to say, in the case of Roe v. Wade, no, states' rights don't stand with regard to abortion either, and therefore a federal law can be passed making abortion illegal at the federal level.
There you go. Which is I wasn't saying it correctly, but that's really kind of what we were thinking. You know, make it a federal law as opposed to a state law,
right,
and as opposed to a Supreme Court decision.
Right. And the question, you know, is this the direction they're going? I'm just saying these guys are ideologues. These guys are following an ideology. They don't have a specific judicial philosophy. Beyond that ideology, this makes it obviously, transparently, absolutely evident. You've got, you know, other even relatively conservative members of the court going along with Oregon on this case and saying, sorry, you know, the way that we read the Ninth and Tenth Amendments is that the states get to make their own decisions on those things that aren't in the Constitution. And Scalia, Thomas, and Roberts And Scalia, Thomas, and Roberts.
And Alito, you know, would have voted with them, which means this would have been a 5-4 decision if Alito was already on the bench, which
right.
looks like he will be.
Which is why it's so important that people call right now toll-free to their member of the United States Senate, 1-888-355-3588. And if it's a Democratic senator you're speaking, or whose staff you're speaking to, tell them that you support a filibuster of the Alito nomination. And if it's a Republican senator, tell them that you support them breaking ranks with their party and not going with this right-wing crank. We want somebody of reasonable judicial temperament on the court. Greg Gorman of the Talk Radio News in Washington, D.C., talkradionews.com. Greg, thanks for being with us today.
Always a pleasure, Tom.
Always great having you with us. 27 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program. Viagra for your brain.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes before the hour, or we'll be in 25 seconds or thereabouts. Coming up on 25 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least a Supreme Court that decides things based on the law rather than on their own individual personal definition of morality or religion or whatever it may be. The Supreme Court upheld Oregon's assisted suicide law, their death, what's called, referred to here in Oregon as the death with dignity law, upheld 6-3 the three dissenters, Scalia, Thomas, well, you know, whatever Scalia does, Thomas does. Scalia, Thomas, and guess who? John Roberts. You think this isn't real stuff? This is real stuff, I'm telling you. This is really rolling down the pike here. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. And let's see here, Bill in Starksville, Mississippi. I'm going to have to ask you to pop Bill on, Alex. My board is locked up. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hi there. How are you today?
I am great. What's up?
Well, I've been listening a lot this morning, and I've got to say that I'm a middle-class, 40-year-old male and feel somewhat left out of what's going on. And you hear what the Gore speech yesterday, and it just puts a fire in your belly.
Yeah.
And it seems to me just the leadership that should have been there when he was walking around the shadow of Bill Clinton that should have come out and said, I'm my own man. And I'm fired up by this, and I want to know, aside from calling my congressman, which I can't in this state, they're all Republicans, other than just saying, I wish you wouldn't do things this way, how can we get more involved and make a bigger impact? I have a group of friends who go, you know, both directions politically, and we all want to get more involved, but we feel so left out.
Well, there's a whole bunch of ways. First of all, contact your local Democratic Party, and at the county level, and you know, find out when they meet, show up for the meetings, participate. Contact the Green Party locally, find out when they meet, show up for one of their meetings. I at the federal level, we absolutely have to take the Democratic Party back. But that doesn't mean that there's also not a place for other political parties here. And I don't want to be excluding the Green Party or any other progressive parties. You know, it's just that at the federal level, we have to accept the fact that, you know, as James Madison pointed out so many years ago, we're stuck with a two-party system because, you know, they invented this government before John Stuart Mill came along in 1861 and came up with proportional representation. So anyhow, get involved at the local level, and that's really the beginning point of the whole thing. You can also, at the national level, there's some great organizations. The organization Democracy for America, .com, that Jim Dean, Howard Dean's brother, runs, has state chapters. In the one here in Oregon, I've spoken at one of their conferences. Jim Dean showed up for it. They got a whole bunch of people together. But right now, the biggest battleground, frankly, in my mind, is the Democratic Party, and we need to be working to take it back.
I agree. The leadership, it seems like we're in turmoil, and we need another strong leader to come forward who can deliver a speech like what was given the other day, like Martin Luther King's speech, something that's going to galvanize us to say, okay, it's time.
It's not just the leaders, Bill. It is we the people as well. This has to be from the bottom up. Well, if you look back at the history of these kinds of things, whether it's the civil rights movement or the suffrage movement or the anti-war movement, various anti-war movements throughout history, you see that when the leaders emerged, the leaders were only able to emerge because the people were already there.
We listened.
It wasn't so much that we sat around and said, oh, cool, a leader, we're ready.
Right.
It was that the leaders said, oh, the people are listening to this message. I think I'll step up to it. We draw the leaders out. They don't draw us out. And so it's incumbent upon us to be participating, and the so-called leaders, they will follow.
Too many people in my age group and my socioeconomic status are going, boy, I wish things were different. And, you know, we're either in the shadow of our parents politically, or we're not really realizing it's ours to take, and we've got to make a change. We've got to put the people in office. We lost the last election. No matter how it was counted, we don't have the office. There's not much we can say about who's getting put in Supreme Court other than saying do a filibuster. We want to make a change. On long term, we've got to get out and vote. We've got to make a difference.
Yeah, and it's got to be more than just voting. Bill, I appreciate your call, and thank you very much. It's great to hear from you. Casey in Seattle, Washington, on the line. Hey, Casey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Tom? How you doing?
I'm well. How are you, Casey?
I am great. So I just got off the phone with my senators.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Cantwell and, let's see.
Maria Cantwell and Patty Murray.
Patty Murray, that's it. Thank you.
Yes. So I called. I know, it was so exciting. So it was the first time that I called. So I didn't actually
get to
speak with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I talked to the person and left all my information.
Great.
And I was actually calling, too, to see what more I could do. And I've organized. I got about 30 people who are going both to a Democratic meeting and to a Republican meeting.
Oh, how great.
I know. So everybody kind of looked at me crazy when I said Republican meeting. But I was like, well, wait, like they talk all this stuff. But I just thought it would be cool if they had to talk all their stuff like in front of us.
Well, and also there may be, it's interesting, I got an email a couple of days ago from somebody who I respect greatly. I'm not going to mention his name on the radio, but somebody whose name you might recognize, who suggested that there is growing evidence that the Democratic Party has been infiltrated by Republicans, by people who are overtly, and not just Republicans, by corporate Republicans, by people who formerly were with the Republican Party. And I'm not suggesting that Democrats infiltrate the Republican Party, but I think that there are a lot of folks out there who historically have been Republican and voted Republican who realize that the Republican Party has gone off the deep end.
Exactly.
And they need to be taken back, the Republican Party, just like those of us who identify ourselves as progressives need to be taking back the Democratic Party. And let's bring both of these parties back to some sanity, and because the Democratic Party is fighting off the corporatists, the what I would call the neo-fascists, and the Republican Party has been taken over by the theocrats and the neocons, the uber-fascists.
What's a theocrat?
A theocrat is somebody who believes that government should be run by God. Theocracy, theology, religion.
Like their God.
Say that again?
Like whatever God that they want.
Yeah, if you read the Old Testament, there were times when, not just the Bible. I mean, you can go through the history of many, many different nations and religions, and you see times when government was run by religious folks, and they said that they were making the decisions because God told them to. As opposed to making decisions, you could argue that Iran right now, for example, is a theocracy, or Afghanistan under the Taliban, a theocracy. It was a government. It's a government that's being run the way that they say God says to run a government.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
And not a healthy thing, by the way.
Yeah, and then I was just going to tell you real quick. So I'm so excited. Like the group that I have going is not your average group. I have everybody from skaters to rappers to, young business people. I mean, it's probably about like over 30 people.
That's great, Casey.
So I'm pretty excited.
That is great. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for calling and letting me know. I appreciate it. It's great to hear from you and keep up the good work. Scott in San Diego, California. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. I wanted to say when you were here, you had a tremendous impact here in San Diego, and the people that were at your talk, if they were active before, are more active now. And those of us that were slightly active and concerned are now really fired up. And what we've been doing today is we've been calling all the senators on the Judiciary Committee, of course our own senators, and one senator's office, we called Joe Biden's office, and one of the people in his office said there's a chance of filibustering Alito if they can pull the four conservative Democratic holdouts into the agreement. That's Mary Landrieu, Mark Pryor, Blanche Lincoln, and Ben Nelson. And I've already called all four of those people to support a filibuster of Alito.
That's interesting. Give me that list one more time, please.
Sure.
I want to write this down.
Mary Landrieu, Louisiana.
Right.
Mark Pryor, Arkansas. Blanche Lincoln, Arkansas. Ben Nelson, Nebraska. Joe Biden identified these four as holdouts, and if they can pull them in, there's a good chance I'll do a filibuster.
Amazing. And so people can call the office of these senators, Landrieu, Pryor, Lincoln, and Nelson, of Nebraska.
Yes.
Because there's two Nelsons in the Senate, as I recall.
Yes.
At 1-888-355-3588. That's the toll-free number.
4-800-426-8073. Also reaches the Capitol switchboard.
Okay, yeah, there's a bunch of different 800 numbers out there. Some of them are sponsored by various groups, you know, some of the socially responsible investment funds and whatnot. And so, anyhow, yeah, good. Scott, thank you very much for sharing that with us. I appreciate the call and your activism there in San Diego. It's a marvelous thing. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Tom in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Tom.
Well, good morning, Tom. How are you?
I am just great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Good to hear. Hey, I have a twist. I just want to discuss something that, what was the premise of having Scooter Libby removed, even though he's under investigation? It was that, wasn't it that if he was guilty, we wouldn't want to have him access to confidential information that could even further make it worse, correct?
I think the premise of having him removed was that he was a political embarrassment.
Well, would that not be also extended to Tom DeLay? He had to resign the Speaker of the House because he was under indictment, correct?
Well, that's why they removed him from the House leadership.
And why wouldn't that same premise then hold, since we do not know what the reality of President Bush's wiretapping is? We have our inspector saying that if that was true, that was an impeachable offense. Why is that not considered that if the president is going awry, we should have him removed until this has been investigated?
The president of the United States. Well, the problem is it's the president of the United States is not an appointed position. I mean, Scooter Libby was appointed. It's fairly easy to take an appointed person and say, you know, sorry, we're going to set you aside. The president was elected by the people, and so there has to be an impeachment process. There has to be an actual bill of impeachment, you know, an indictment issued. And Tom, I appreciate your, you know, what you had to say. Interesting point. But there is a process. It's specified in the Constitution. First, he has to be impeached. And then, if that's successful, then there's a trial in the Senate, and he has to be convicted to be actually removed from office. And you know, God willing, it'll happen. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome to George Bush National Park, where the air smells just like diesel. And there ain't no animals left around here except snakes, skunks, rats, and weasels.
Yes, the George W. Bush National Park. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman radio program, where we run rings around the right wing every single day, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, 50 minutes past the hour, coming up on 9 minutes before the hour. And, you know, sometimes life just gets weird. You know what I mean?
As we know, there are known knowns. There are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there's some things we do not know.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync and think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know. And if one looks throughout the history of our country and other free countries, it is the latter category that tend to be the difficult ones.
Yes, the unknown unknowns. Well, what do you do in a time of war? Ramzan Kadyrov, the Prime Minister of Chechnya, thinks he has the solution. He has figured out what to do. As the Independent reports, Russia's idiosyncratic loyalist strongman in Chechnya has said that he wants to legalize polygamy and allow men to take up to four wives because there aren't enough men to go around because of a decade of war. He thinks that he says, and I quote, He said, I think it is necessary because we are at war. It is very important for the Chechen people. Sharia law allows this. It does not run counter to it. Therefore, each man who can provide for four wives should do it. And Ramzan Kadyrov, the prime minister of Chechnya, calling, actually, tragically, they have a situation now in Chechnya where the population of women is 18% higher than that of men. And it's in large part because they have had this war going on with Russia since 1994. So, you know, in a way, you can, you know, kind of make a joke about this. There are a lot of Muslim republics, by the way, where it is legal to have up to four wives. In fact, Louise and I stayed at the, we didn't stay, I visited the home of a fellow in the Middle East back, must be 8-10 years ago, where there was the father and his, he was like maybe 70, and his wife in her 70s, and then his wife in her 50s, and his wife in her 30s, and his wife in her 20s, and maybe 8 or 9 kids running around, and yeah, it seemed reasonable. You know, I mean, they all seemed happy, but I wouldn't be. I'm sorry. Monogamy is fine with me. So anyway, our Everything You Know is Wrong for the Day. It's a little break from John Roberts. Enough of John Roberts, right? Amy in San Diego. Hey, Amy, welcome to the program. Amy in San Diego? Amy? Amy, we're going to have to put you on hold. I'm not hearing you. Maybe let's try Dick in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Dick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing today?
I am absolutely great, Dick, but I'll get better. What's up?
Oh, I just wanted to tell you, being from Ohio, we need new people to straighten up this economy, jobs. We're just failing somewhere. And I want to say about our nation, President Bush, I don't agree with him on the Medicare, on the Medicaid cuts. We need to, I inform the media, I write and I call the talk shows in Ohio, but we need to get new people to run this country in Ohio.
So how do you propose doing that, Dick?
Well, I think from your last caller, I say myself, I write all the Ohio papers. I say we keep informed, communicate, and just get somebody in there to stop this.
Get out there and get active.
Get active,
involved.
Yeah.
Well said. Dick, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And you know, well said. Absolutely well said. This is absolutely tragic story out of the Los Angeles Times here. And this should be a screaming headline. It should cause a lot of Americans to just go, whoa, wait a minute. The headline, Marshall Plan for Iraq Fades. After more than 2.5 years of sputtering reconstruction work, the United States Marshall Plan to rebuild this war-torn country is drawing to a close this year. We're not going to rebuild Iraq anymore at all. And you think they're going to start loving us all of a sudden? They have been waiting. A lot of the opposition against us is because they've been waiting for us to rebuild their country. They say, hey, it's the most powerful country in the world. Certainly they can turn the electricity on. No, we haven't done it. Amy in San Diego. Hey, Amy, you're back?
I'm back. Can you hear me now?
I can.
What's up? Good. I just wanted to expand on what you're saying about Alito. If you go to congress.org, you can send telegrams to your senators. It only costs $12.95 to send it to both of them. And I sent telegrams to both Boxer and Feinstein. And it makes an extra impact. And just one other thing I wanted to tell you is I heard Scott a little earlier, and I was at the same talk that you gave a year ago, and it really, really inspired me as well. And Scott and I want to do a podcast on state government, and you are our inspiration, and Scott's going to email you to get pointers from you, but I just wanted to let you know that you really are very inspiring.
Well, thank you, Amy. It was such a pleasure to come there to San Diego and speak at the, it was the Church of Today, right?
Yes, it was, yeah. And when are you coming back? We want to see you again.
Well, we'll have to work it out. I mean, I had a marvelous time there, and Wendy, the pastor there, is an incredible person, and some great folks. So, but in any case, yes. So you're going to you're starting a local activist group?
Well, we have one. There's one that I'm working on in particular. I'm actually in a bunch of them, but the one I'm working really hard on is publicly funded elections.
Mm-hmm.
And last week it came out of the AB 583 came out of the Elections Committee. It passed. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to appropriation. So anybody in California, please call your senators to get them to get it out of the appropriations bill, and then it'll be voted on the full House.
That's great. That's absolutely great. Amy, thanks a lot, and keep up the great work there in San Diego. Great to hear from you. It's 57 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. In the next hour, we'll be coming up talking a little more about Al Gore and what's the future of Iraq, the future of America, plus Alec Dubrow from the International Labor Communications Association will be with us. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, Diane in Nebraska, in our chat room, hey, Diane, in our chat room says, hi, I live in Nebraska and call Ben Nelson's office. We were speaking just a minute ago about the swing state, these four conservative Democrats who, if they could be swung, according to Biden's office, if they could be swung in favor of a filibuster, it might happen. So she called Nelson's office just a few minutes ago. She says, hi, I live in Nebraska, called Ben Nelson's office. The aide mentioned that he hadn't heard from many people from my side. I had called to ask that Nelson filibuster Alito's nomination. Sounds like the pro-Alito side has been calling to pressure Nelson. Interesting. Landrieu, Pryor, Lincoln, and Nelson of Nebraska. These are the four Democrats, apparently, that according to Joe Biden's office, need to be convinced that there should be a filibuster. The toll-free number for Congress, 1-888-355-3588. So, you know, something you can do. Alec Dubrow is with us. He's the media coordinator with the International Labor Communications Association, ILCAonline.org. Hey, Alec, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Boy, I wish I had a senator I could call, but I live in Washington, D.C., so I don't have one.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah,
yes, it is.
You know, quite literally don't have one.
Yes, I'm sure there's a segue from that into my topic. But...
Well, actually, what it means is you can call any senator if you'd like.
That's true.
So, Martin Luther King's relationship to organized labor. Yesterday was MLK Day.
Yes, indeed. And it was a powerful relationship. And not surprisingly, but interestingly, I never heard it mentioned yesterday among all the celebrations of it. And certainly the president didn't mention it. But Martin Luther King was in a line of leaders. He just happened to be the right leader at the right time, but he was following a lot of work done before him, specifically by the Sleeping Car Porters Union and its leader, A. Philip Randolph, who some people may remember. And Randolph was, in fact, the principal organizer of the March on Washington in 63. And I just found this out, that earlier Randolph had threatened to organize a March on Washington in June 1941, and Roosevelt didn't want it to happen, so he issued an executive order banning discrimination in the defense industries and federal bureaus called the Fair Employment Act, and
Incredible.
They backed off.
Incredible.
I know. I mean, and this was barely known. I mean, we don't talk about this very much, but the work that Randolph had done in organizing that union, it took him 12 years to get a contract with the Pullman sleeping cars.
Oh, and George Pullman was notorious for running basically a company town and a company. I mean, you know, it was just the whole thing, you know, his relationship with organized labor. Well, I mean, you had the great Pullman strike.
Even after that, he insisted that, or at least the line insisted that, all the porters, all of whom were African-American, be called George in honor of George Pullman. So they were always addressed as George, no matter what their name was.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's incredible.
Nevertheless,
so, and let us not forget, by the way, that Martin Luther King, when he was assassinated, he was giving us, he had gone to Memphis to give a speech in support of a strike.
It's exactly right. And Here he had an alliance with a labor leader named Jerry Wirth, who became president of AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a friend of King's, and Wirth, a white guy, had set up the first New York chapter of Congress of Racial Equality. And Wirth's union called out the strike in Memphis. They went on strike in February, and Wirth said, no, I don't think it's a good idea to do a garbage strike in February. It doesn't smell bad enough. They're not going to cave. But then when they insisted on going ahead with it, he gave them all the support he could.
Right.
And
I remember hearing the speech. Actually, I don't remember it in real time, but, you know, over the years, I have heard the speech that King gave the day before he was assassinated, in which he talks about, you know, I've seen the promised land, and, you know, I'd like to live a long life, but if I don't, that's okay, because I've seen the promised land. I've seen, you know, and he's talking about the possibility of racial equality and small-d democracy in the United States.
Absolutely. King said, told the Illinois AFL-CIO, quote, the labor movement was the principal force that transformed misery and despair into hope and progress. King was somebody who always tied spiritual health and growth to material things.
So Alec Dubrow, you're the media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association. You guys have a relationship with the AFL-CIO. Well, here we have Martin Luther King, whose ties to organized labor were strong and whose support of organized labor was fervent, you know, nearly religious. You have Abraham Lincoln, who supported organized labor. I mean, you know, there's this long line of luminaries who have supported organized labor. And yet it seems at this particular moment in history that the average person in America, or at least a significant number of people, I'm not quite sure I'd say a majority, but it may well be a majority of Americans, think that when people are going out on strike, as we saw with the transit worker union strike in New York, that when they're going out on strike, they're just being selfish. They're just looking out for themselves. You know, what does that have to do with me? How do we turn this around? How do we not just two old white guys like you and me sitting around talking about, oh, how it used to be in the old days when labor was really important. How do we make labor important again?
Well, one thing we have to remember is that even when labor was at its height, many people felt that way. You know, there was resentment.
I mean, felt the way that I just described.
Yes, yes. I mean, Eugene Debs said, you know, we're going to be hated for this, but it's the only way of making progress.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I don't have a single solution to this, but I do know that persistence helps, because I know, for instance, 3 years ago, talking about Walmart just met a deaf ear and a blank stare. Today, people are beginning to understand the relationship between Walmart's hiring practices, its wages and benefits, its effect on the community. And this has almost entirely come about from a labor-inspired and organized campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the messages come at us from the media, from the other side, constantly and without let up, and it just takes a long time. But you know, if you keep prodding the truth long enough, people will begin to hear it.
I think that the average American worker right now has this strong sense that there is some very thin membrane that separates him or her from poverty. You know, I mean, that there is from being in the middle class, the working middle class, to being in the working poor. And they're not quite sure what it is. And you've got the conservatives out there saying, brown people coming across the border. Get down there and join the militiamen, you know, or the Minutemen or whatever. I mean, you've got people playing on racial fears. You've got conservatives playing, oh, it's the liberals. They're unions and the teachers unions. How dare they? And all this kind of, and you've got all these people, all these different groups playing on their fears. And yet, really, if you look at history, the only thing that stands between the middle class being the middle class and the middle class becoming the working poor is organized labor. We must get that message out.
We must. And, you know, the illustrations of it having done so are anywhere you care to look in history. That same Phil Randolph and the sleeping car porters was responsible for raising an entire generation or two from poor the middle class. They
do you think Andy Stern is the
black
next
middle class?
Do you think Andy Stern is the next Phil Randolph?
I don't want to touch that one.
I realize, you know, he's on the other side.
I think he has the capacity to make some big changes.
And do you see a leader emerging like that out of the AFL-CIO?
Larry Cohen, leader of the communications workers, is an innovative and charismatic leader.
And how are the communications workers? Tomorrow, I'm not sure if it's going to be tomorrow, but one day this week we're going to be debating a conservative about deregulation of the telecommunications industry. How are the communications workers getting involved in this? We have about a minute, Alec.
On the issue of deregulation?
Yeah, because it's going to be another break the union thing, you know?
Well, of course. And, I mean, they've been involved in it for decades because the first move to break down the telephone monopolies met with resistance from labor. Labor tends to be conservative. You know, if they have gains, they don't want to see it changed. But at this point, they are recognizing that, you know, you have a multiplicity of companies and that really the organizing has to take place across many companies. And it's just a very difficult thing to do, but they've been strategizing on this, and in some cases they've been very successful. Anyway, I can give you more details if you give me more time on it.
But yeah, well, we'll have to do it again next week.
Okay.
Alec Dubrow with the International Labor Communications Association, the media coordinator, the website ilcaonline.org, and you can join, by the way, whether you're in organized labor or not.
Check
out the website. Alec, thanks a lot for being with us.
Okay,
good talking
Tom.
With you. 16 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman radio program, where reason is our lifestyle choice.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Speaking of war, two deploying soldiers and a concerned mother reported Friday. This report by Nathaniel R. Helms on the Soldiers for the Truth website. Two deploying soldiers and a concerned mother reported Friday afternoon that the U.S. Army appears to be singling out soldiers who have purchased Pinnacle's dragon skin body armor for special treatment. The soldiers, who are currently staging for combat operations from a secret location, report that their commander told them that if they are wearing Pinnacle Dragon skin and were killed, their beneficiaries might not receive the death benefits from their $400,000 SGLI life insurance policies. Soldiers were ordered to leave the privately purchased body armor at home or face the possibility of both losing their life insurance benefit and facing disciplinary action. Helms goes on to report the soldiers asked for anonymity because they are concerned they will face retaliation for going public with the Army's apparently new directive. At the source's request, Defense Watch has also agreed not to reveal the unit at which the incident occurred for operational security reasons. On Saturday morning, a soldier affected by the order reported to Defense Watch that the directive specified that all, in quotes, all commercially available body armor was prohibited. The soldier said the order came down Friday morning from the headquarters, United States Special Operations Command, that's HQ U.S. SOCOM, located at MacDill Air Force Base, Florida, arrived unexpectedly while his unit was preparing to deploy on combat operations. The soldier said the order was deeply disturbing to many of the men who had used their own money to purchase dragon skin because it will affect both their mobility and ballistic protection. He said, we have to be able to move. The dragon skin armor is heavy, but it is made so we have mobility and the best ballistic protection out there. This is crazy, and they're threatening us with our benefits if we don't comply. The soldier reiterated Friday's report that any soldier who refused to comply with the order and was subsequently killed in action could be denied $400,000 in death benefit provided by their SGLI life insurance, as well as face disciplinary action. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. This is incredible. Incredible. This is from Defense Watch. Yes, support our troops. Support our troops. Yeah, this, Alex notes, I don't get it. troops want to buy their own body armor because the military isn't buying it. Right. That's right. And, in fact, there was a report that came out last week that said that 80% of the soldiers who have died so far, of the nearly 3,000 soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan who have died so far from wounds to the torso. Now, not all of those 3,000 have died from those kinds of wounds, but of those who have, 80% of them would still be alive if they had armor available since 2003 to the U.S. Army and the Marine Corps and the National Guard. But the Pentagon has refused to authorize it, to buy it for them. Hasn't done it. And so you got these soldiers going out and saying, okay, we'll get our own. And when they do, now the Army is saying, okay, you get your own armor, and you get shot, your family gets nothing. Oh, we're all in favor of privatization, except for when it comes to soldiers. Now, we're all in favor of supporting the troops, except for when it comes to the troops. You know, they want to use the rhetoric to scare people, but they don't want to use the rhetoric to protect our child. It's just this is just tragic. Al Gore yesterday.
One of the other ways the administration has tried to control the flow of information has been by consistently resorting to the language and politics of fear in order to short-circuit the debate and drive its agenda forward without regard to the evidence. Fear drives out reason. Fear suppresses the politics of discourse and opens the door to the politics of destruction.
This and fear is at the core of the Bush administration's strategy for getting everything that they want done. I mean, George W. Bush, speaking to his biographer back in 1998, before the 2000 election, to Mickey Herskowitz, a guy who's writing it, the Bush family friend who they hired to write his biography, told him that he would not make the mistakes that his father made of squandering his political capital. You'll recall his father had a 100-hour war in Iraq. He would not make the mistake that his father made of squandering that political capital. You know, being a war president, he would use the political capital that he would gain in Iraq to get his agenda through. And his agenda?
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
His agenda, roll back the New Deal. Get rid of Social Security. Get rid of unemployment insurance. Get rid of Medicare. Put a poison pill in Medicare with a drug benefit that prevents the government from negotiating with pharmaceutical companies, so it'll go bankrupt so quickly it'll vanish within a decade. Yeah, his agenda, and he has not been particularly secretive about this. Americans are starting to wake up. Let's hope more do and more quickly. It's 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. I was sharing with you before this whole thing about the Department of Defense and the body armor. These soldiers who are being told if they wear this private body armor that they won't get the $400,000 life insurance policy if they get killed. Here's the ultimate irony at the very end of the story. Last year, again, this from Defense Watch. Last year, the Department of Defense, under severe pressure from Congress, authorized a one-time $1,000 reimbursement to soldiers who had purchased civilian equipment to supplement either inadequate or unavailable equipment they needed for combat operations. At the time, there was no restriction on what the soldiers could buy as long as it was specifically intended to offer personal protection or further the mission capabilities while in theater. I mean, tell me that doesn't just, like, you know, just fry your whatever. Well, here, by the way, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466, all across the United States. If you'd like to drop into our chat room, meet some of the finest minds in the whole entire Internet, go to TomHartman.com and click Live Chat. Our website back up and running today. The message board also running as well. The Zogby poll is out, a brand new Zogby poll. George W. Bush's approval rating has slipped into a post-holiday funk, again dipping below 40%. In fact, the deterioration of the president's numbers appears to be the result of eroding support among the investor class and others who supported his 2004 reelection bid, says pollster John Zogby, president and CEO of Zogby International. And the problem? The Iraq War. Just 34% of respondents said Mr. Bush was doing a good or excellent job of managing the war, down from 38% in mid-October. Overall approval rating, 46%. Support for managing the war dropped 5 points since October, from 45 to 40%. This guy's a train wreck. I mean, he's just it's just a presidential train wreck. Certainly the most corrupt administration in the history of the United States. Probably one of the most incompetent presidents in the history of the United States. And he thought he could just, you know, make the whole thing happen by way of deception. And I'm sorry, we're not being deceived. I want to go back and revisit some of Al Gore's speech here yesterday. This is such an important speech. He made so many important points, and that it's really worth, for those of you who heard it the first hour of the program, you're going to love hearing just, you know, some clips of it again. And for those of you who haven't heard it, this is the guy of our times. I'm ready to start a draft Gore movement. Al Gore, the only president of the United States who was never president of the United States. Anyhow, here he speaks about how these so-called conservatives, this administration, are spitting in the face, my words, not Al Gore's, of the founders of this country by saying that we have the world changed on 9/11. We're facing a risk, a threat like we never faced before. Like, you know, hey, wait a minute. We had the British living among us at one point in time. I mean, we fought a war on our own ground. And not only did we not give up our civil liberties, we fought for them. Anyhow, Al Gore says it better than I can. Well, here he is.
The founders of our country faced dire threats. If they failed in their endeavors, they would have been hung as traitors. The very existence of our country was at risk. Yet in the teeth of those dangers, they insisted on establishing the full Bill of Rights. Is our Congress today in more danger than were their predecessors when the British Army was marching on the Capitol? Is the world more dangerous than when we faced an ideological enemy with tens of thousands of nuclear missiles ready to be launched on a moment's notice to completely annihilate the country? It is simply an insult to those who came before us and sacrificed so much on our behalf to imply that we have more to be fearful of than they did.
You get that? I mean, it is such an insult to suggest that we have more to be fearful of than the founders of this country. And yet that's exactly what George W. Bush is saying. And I am just astounded looking back at how often, how many times we hear these cons come on these TV talk shows and say, well, you know, the world changed on 9/11, and everybody nods their head. Yeah, what? You forgot about the War of 1812? You know, we had a war with England. You forgot about the Revolutionary? You forgot about World War II? I mean, this is not the first time America has faced an enemy. You forgot about the Cold War? I mean, yeah, we kind of went over the edge from time to time, but with the Cold War. But we also brought ourselves back. Richard Nixon thought he could use fear of the Soviet Union to justify illegally wiretapping who? His political opponents, the Democrats. Who is George W. Bush wiretapping that he is unwilling to tell a judge about? Could it be Al Gore? Could it be John Kerry? Could it be Janie Rubin, who was sitting in for John Kerry in a lot of the debates, who happens to be married to Christiane Amanpour? And might that be why Alan Greenspan's wife, Andrea Mitchell of NBC News, is asking James Risen, the author of the book that blew this whole thing wide open. If Christiane Amanpour was one of the people who was being wiretapped? I mean, what's the deal here? In America, Americans want to know now. While support for impeaching President Bill Clinton never reached the 50% threshold, even during the impeachment process, in fact, it dropped down into the low 30s during the impeachment process, today, new Zogby poll, by a margin of 52% to 43%, Americans want Congress to impeach President Bush if he wiretapped American citizens without a judge's approval. And this is something that Bush has already confessed to. The poll found that 52% of Americans agreed with the following statement. Quote, if President Bush wiretapped American citizens without the approval of a judge, do you agree or disagree that Congress should consider holding him accountable through impeachment? End quote. 43% disagreed, 52% agreed, 6% didn't know or declined to answer. Poll has a 2.9% margin of error. That means by just about any way you want to slice and dice it, more than half of Americans, at least half of Americans, say that's it. As Bob Fertig, the co-founder of AfterDowningStreet.org and Democrats.com said, the American people are not buying Bush's outrageous claim that he has the power to wiretap American citizens without a warrant. Americans believe terrorism can be fought without turning our own government into Big Brother. As Al Gore said,
and yet they faithfully protected our freedoms, and now it's up to us to do the very same thing. We have a duty as Americans to defend our citizens' right, not only to life, but also to liberty and the pursuit of happiness. It is therefore vital in our current circumstances that immediate steps be taken to safeguard our Constitution against the present danger posed by the intrusive overreaching on the part of the executive branch and the president's apparent belief that he need not live under the rule of law. I endorse the words of Bob Barr when he said, and I quote, the president has dared the American people to do something about it for the sake of the Constitution. I hope they will.
Now, keep in mind, Bob Barr was the Republican from Georgia in the House of Representatives who was one of the managers of the impeachment of Bill Clinton. One of the managers of the impeachment process. Howard in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Howard, welcome to the program.
I'm trying to find something on the computer, and I can't find it. I'm so frustrating. Anyways, here in Pittsburgh, we have a program. It's pretty good. Can I mention the talk show host name?
Oh, sure.
Lynn Cullen.
Oh, Lynn is wonderful.
Yes,
Lynn is absolutely wonderful, and she's every day there on WPTT and does a great job. She's one of America's great progressive talk show hosts.
And she had as a guest on her program here about a couple weeks ago, and it's a group of young ladies or housewives or older ladies that have become politically involved because Pennsylvania's legislatures passed themselves a early in the morning pay raise for themselves and the judges.
Oh, gee, what a surprise.
Yeah, it's one of those secret little deals that the state of Pennsylvania did.
We're shocked that there's gambling in the back of Rick's bar here in Casablanca. Shocked!
So anyways, this new organization is are these ladies that are upset, and the name of them is Run Baby Run.
Hmm.
And so they're becoming active. They're running as progressives.
You mean they're actually running for office?
Yes.
Oh, great.
Yes, and this is something that I was trying to find the website, but I can't find it.
Well, if you find it, Howard, you know,
can
send me
an email.
Send me an email. It's Tom, T-H-O-M, at Tom Hartman, T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's, .com. And it's actually my email address, and I actually read my own emails. So.
Well, this is really exciting because this is like grassroots. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's so important.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom.
It really is. Thanks a lot, Howard. Good to hear from you. Amazing. Bernie in Bend, Oregon. Hey, Bernie. We just have a minute or so left. What's up?
Okay, this is real quick. Tom, thank you so much for running the speech by Al Gore. I can't tell you how good it is to hear something positive like that.
I agree, Bernie. I absolutely agree. In fact, I'll play a little more of it after the break, and we'll take a few more calls.
And Tom, one other thing in relation to that, if you can remind your callers and listeners once again to all call their senators.
You're absolutely right, Bernie. We got to call people and stop this Alito nomination. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the place where being progressive never felt so good. The Tom Hartman Radio Program coming up on 9 minutes before the hour. David and Blaine Washington on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, you know, nothing more has been said about the additional documents that are surfacing about the illegal wiretapping that Bush ordered prior to September 11th.
Yeah, I think a lot of this, you know, there's so much of this stuff flying around, it's hard to keep track of it all. I am frankly not certain when this thing began. Do you know that for sure it was happening before 9/11?
Well, on Ross Story, they had it on there like a few days ago. But they didn't elaborate on it because there's just so much going on right now.
Well, one source does not necessarily the truth make, although
right.
Larissa is usually pretty good about vetting her stuff.
Right.
My concern, frankly, you know, let's say it started before 9/11, that puts a whole other complexion on it. But here, it was certainly going on during a presidential campaign.
Oh, totally. And thank God for Al Gore, because the dots that he connected yesterday in his speech, I mean, that could be glommed over, you know, by people who haven't heard it, so they can get, you know, caught up on where we're at as far as this constitutional crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, David, I agree. And thanks a lot for the call. It's absolutely. In fact, let's go back to Alan here a little bit more of this. This speech is so important. This is one of the most important speeches of the year.
A special counsel should be immediately appointed by the Attorney General to remedy the obvious conflict of interest that prevents him from investigating what many believe are serious violations of law by the president. Republican as well as Democratic members of Congress should support the bipartisan call of the Liberty Coalition for the appointment of this special counsel to pursue the criminal issues raised by the warrantless wiretapping of Americans by the president, and it should be a political issue in any race, regardless of party, section of the country, House of Congress, or anyone who opposes the appointment of a special counsel under these dangerous circumstances when our Constitution is at risk.
There you go. And, in fact, this morning, as I mentioned before, this morning I had Congressman Brian Barrett of Washington State on my program. And you know, following Al Gore's advice, my first question, do you support, Congressman, the appointment of a special prosecutor or an investigation by Congress into the possibility that George W. Bush has committed crimes? And he just unambiguously said, yes. Of course. So and that's what we need to be asking. Number one, that's what we need to be contacting our members of Congress about and letting them know, hey, please support an investigation, a special counsel and congressional investigations. But right now, Congress is controlled by, you know, the Republicans, both houses. They're, you know, any kind of investigation they do, even Arlen Specter, you know, he's going to investigate. Yeah, I mean, he may even have the best of intentions and may try to do a great job, but it's his party running this thing. So anyhow, contact them and say, we want an investigation of this. We want to know what's going on. We want to know what's going on. And by the way, while I've got you on the phone, if you're speaking with one of your two senators, if it's a Democrat, filibuster Alito. And if it's a Republican, by the way, sir, please do not vote to confirm Sam Alito, please break with your party and go with your conscience. This guy is far too right-wing for the United States of America in this day and age. Billy in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey, buddy. It's always good to hear you.
It's always great to hear from you, Billy.
A couple of things. First of all, I want to say Jamie Rubin is a great guy. I happen to know him, and he's a real sweet, smart guy. I wish he was president of the United States.
Who's that? I'm sorry?
Jamie Rubin.
Oh, Jamie Rubin, yeah.
I'm a poor husband now.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, I've been saying for the longest time, the WWJD to people. And I wondered, did you get it from me or did I get it from you?
What would Jefferson do?
Yes.
Well, I titled a book that way. I'm not sure if it was your idea or mine. I don't remember.
Well, see, exactly. But it's such a good idea, and it's the perfect way to describe in the short form what you were saying, to paraphrase Al Gore. Was that what Al Gore was saying?
Yeah, his whole point was the founders were facing, you think terrorism's a problem now. I mean, imagine if you had 100,000, I mean, if you want to expand the scale, I mean, back then there were only a couple of million people, at least of European ancestry in North America. And so if you had hundreds of thousands of terrorists who are actually walking around with rifles and forcing themselves into people's homes, and yet in the face of that kind of terrorism and shooting at people and killing people, in the face of that, the founders of this country said, and therefore we demand that we have the right of privacy, or
exactly.
What they called it back in those days, because the word privacy back then meant toilet functions, they meant the right of security in our homes, our persons, our papers, and our possessions.
So, Tom?
Yes, sir.
I'm giving you permission to use, as a short form and as a way to plug your book, WWJD when we talk about this subject.
Okay, Billy,
okay?
Thank you very
much. One thing about Alito.
Yeah.
You know, it would be legitimate at this point, and you're a religious man, so you're a good one to throw this out to. It would be legitimate at this point to say, in fact, that we shouldn't be putting anybody who's Catholic up into the Supreme Court at this point, with the Church continuing to try to affect our public policy. That in itself should keep somebody off the bench.
Well, this, and you start talking like that, and people say, you know, this is the anti-Catholic version of anti-Semitism and all that kind of thing, and we've got to be very careful, I think, Billy, of not going down that road of saying somebody is disqualified simply because they're Catholic. On the other hand, as long as the Catholic Church is taking positions on things like euthanasia, like, you know, the Oregon's death with dignity law, and they've come right out and said that this should not be law. I mean, the Catholic Church has. And the three guys who voted to uphold the Bush position, we're all Catholic. You gotta wonder, you know, are these guys voting their religion or are they voting their conscience? I don't know. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program, conservative Ankar Gatte says there's a lawless assault on Walmart. Oh, yeah? Jeffrey Feldman is going to be framing the collapse of the Republican Party. That and more tomorrow. Remember, my friends, activism starts with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.